Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
As new risks increase in severity and frequency around the world, ethics and compliance, that's E&C programs, are focused on their risk mitigation efforts. And this is a key theme of LRN's brand new 2024 Ethics and Compliance Program Effectiveness Report, which features global data and insights from more than 1,400 E&C professionals. According to our research, values-based programs are not only the most effective, but also correlate strongly with reduced risk and better business outcomes. So how are E&C programs in regions like the UK evolving in response to this increasingly complex risk landscape? And what do these global best practices look like for programs in that region on a day-to-day basis? Hello and welcome to LRN's Principled Podcast. I'm your host, Frances Ebekwe, Senior E&C Advisor and Barrister at LRN. And today, I'm really pleased to say that I'm joined by Gabby Gray, the Head of Legal at Alliance Pharma. We're going to be discussing key findings from the UK edition of the 2024 Ethics and Compliance Programme Effectiveness Report and how they apply to programmes in that region. So, Gabby, thank you for joining me on the Principled Podcast. So could you start by telling our listeners a little bit about Alliance Pharma and your role within the organisation?
Hi, Frances. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. And hopefully I will have something interesting to say about ethics and compliance and LRN's 2024 Effectiveness Report for your listeners today. So a little bit about me. I am Head of Legal for Alliance Pharma, a consumer healthcare company. While we are headquartered in the UK, our operations are global, with all of the opportunities and challenges that presents for companies, particularly from an ethics and compliance perspective. At Alliance, we sell a mix of pharmaceuticals and over-the-counter consumer health products. Our portfolio is a collection of trusted brands with sort of proven clinical efficacy. We have two strategic focus areas, that of helping damaged skin and supporting healthy aging. And these reflect not just corporate goals, but a genuine concern for the well-being of our consumers. So I really love my job as head of legal. And as much as that probably comes across as a bit of a platitude, I genuinely relish the breadth of my role. I have an incredibly supportive boss, our general counsel, and a really competent legal team who keep me honest. So as head of legal, obviously, my role spans contracts, regulations, and everything in between. But I also wear the hat of our ethics and compliance. And for me, you know, a commitment to ethical conduct and a dedication to upholding the values that define Alliance are really an important part of my role. Our CEO has said to me, you know, that the legal team is the conscience and moral center of the company, and that's a responsibility I embrace proudly.
You know, I think that's a great segue into this question that I want to explore with you, Gabby. We talk about conscience and moral sense of the company. And, you know, I want to link that with, you know, a fundamental principle of E&C programs is that values are the principal motivator of ethical behavior. You know, this idea has actually gained significant traction over time. And according to our global data set, there's actually quite a key figure whereby 77% of E&C professionals say that their organization emphasizes values rather than rules to motivate ethical behavior. And that's actually a 27 percentage point increase from when LRN first asked this type of question in 2016. So I just wanted to explore your thoughts on that.
So I can only really speak from a UK perspective, as my 20-year career has really been solely based at UK-headquartered global corporates. But I can certainly say that over the course of my career, I've seen the evolution of ethics and compliance programs from what was sort of originally called corporate social responsibility programs back in the noughties, to sustainability programs in the 2010s, now to environmental, social, and governance programs, but all of which ultimately sought to address how companies should best discharge their ethical responsibilities to the communities they operate in, to their customers, and to their stakeholders, and now increasingly corporate accountability to and for our planet. So I absolutely agree that there is a growing recognition that these early ethics and compliance programs perhaps had an over-reliance on policy, procedure, and rules that may not have reflected the realities on the ground for employees, and in some cases were impossible to comply with, you know, leading to kind of a disconnect between stated principles and actual behavior. I had certain compliance investigations that happened in China, and you would see that in China, there is just a different cultural milieu. And it's a lot harder for employees to speak up against leaders in their business because it's such a hierarchical culture. And often there's such a focus on familial and friendship bonds that that can come into conflict with duty to the company. And I think it was just really important coming from a Western perspective to really understand that in order to create a more values-based compliance program than something that's simply focused on rules.
Yeah. So really kind of moving across, I guess, from that tick list kind of checkbox. Yeah.
It has to work on the ground. I mean, it has to work in a global context if that's what you're operating in as a company. You know, so what I would say is at Alliance, while policies and procedures absolutely still do form the bedrock of our ENC program, so I would, if you want me to elaborate on that, I think I would argue that a values-led compliance program really involves the following factors. Number one, setting the appropriate tone from the top. And everyone talks about this, but like, and what does that mean? I think targeted ethics and compliance training to the board on the current ethics and compliance landscape is crucial. I think strong executive comms to the business, ideally in engaging formats like videos that really champion and support ethical behavior.
Okay, so not just your standard emails, so making it interactive and engaging, which is another thing we found in the reports. Yeah,
absolutely. So, you know, training companies, compliance companies like LRN, you know, are introducing such things as having an intro video from your CEO as part of the compliance training program. And I think that that really lands well with employees. I think also having a board level ethics and compliance committee that has explicit responsibility for oversight of ENC, which is then supported by the people who are actually managing day-to-day operations in the business, thereby sort of also setting the appropriate tone from the middle.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, ideally, and I think this is on the horizon for a lot of companies, and some companies have achieved it, executive performance incentives tied to measurable ENC targets.
Definitely. I was just going to say on that point, we actually found that with high performing programs, you know, they actually did better in those areas because they had an active board of directors and they also ensured personal accountability for misconduct.
Yeah, exactly. And so other things that are kind of crucial, sort of number two, regular compliance audits that identify compliance risks and gaps that are specific to your company. I do think employee and partner codes of conduct that focus on values over rule following are really important and that set out expected behaviors and include such things as like ethical decision-making trees to really help people sort of come to the right decision. And then crucially, easy access to a speak up helpline that enables employees and the general public to raise ethical concerns anonymously without fear of detrimental treatment. I think that's really important. I'm speaking to an LRN podcast. And so I definitely think gamified annual compliance training that creates awareness and keeps people's attention without being patronizing. Mm-hmm. Ideally, with a training cadence that kind of conflicts with financial quarters, year ends, so that people actually have capacity to take the training, is really important. And then I think that also then needs to be enhanced by bespoke training for teams on certain specific areas of compliance. So for example, delivering workshop-based modern slavery red flag training to the employees who conduct supplier site visits, for example. And then I think finally, and this is probably a drum I'm going to beat throughout our chat, Francis, is, and this is sort of most importantly for global corporates, a values-led ENC program that's designed for the global workforce that is culturally sensitive to and appropriate for all offices and locations of operation. So like this involves really simple things such as ensuring your policies and training are available in your core languages, not just in English, and are not completely UK or US centric, that you're considering the cultural norms and business practices in each country of operation. And you're taking this into account when you're either implementing your ENC program or conducting compliance investigations. And I think, you know, in order to ensure that a values-led approach will resonate with the entire workforce.
Yeah, definitely agree with those points. You know, I think we're both smiling as you know, you're speaking and I'm listening. And I would definitely, you know, tap into that point where you've spoken about interactives, for example. And I know we've spoken previously and, you know, you were talking about your compliance program, and it's actually quite welcoming to find that, you know, you are meandering into that area of, you know, high performing UK programs. And we found in the report, for example, that high performing UK programs are really leading the way in several areas. For example, we found that, you know, they were 1.4 times more likely to strengthen their codes of conduct using interactive data. And, you know, that can include interactives, but also, you know, the number of clicks in the code and topics that employees choose. And also they were 1.8 times more likely than less effective programs to provide employees with continuous learning. So that goes to your point about, you know, kind of having gamified training, but also, you know, different types of training to engage with particular employees based on their needs. So that really is music to my ears, because that really does link to the findings in our report. And I just wanted to hone in a bit more in terms of, there are so many further insights from the 2024 report, and I just wanted to explore those too. And, you know, based on the UK edition of this report, I just wondered, you know, if there are any other findings that most resonated with you.
Yeah, so I totally agree that data protection is a key area of focus for global corporates, as so many countries are bringing in data protection legislation that may either have extraterritorial reach or that may catch you if you have employees or collect data in that jurisdiction. So, for example, Alliance Pharma has an office in Shanghai. And so we spent a lot of 2023 getting compliant with the PIPL, which is the personal information protection law in China, in time for the December compliance deadline. And we've also had to grapple with how to best manage data protection as a global company. So, for example, do we take a jurisdiction-specific approach and have multiple policies, which can be quite tricky to manage? Or do we take a harmonized global approach to data protection that is sort of broadly compliant that may miss important local nuances? So in our case, we've sort of ended up on primarily following a kind of an EU GDPR approach in most jurisdictions with specific enhancements for local law where necessary. But it was a conversation and definitely a hot topic last year. Another hot topic and increased risk identified in the report is the influx of ESG-related legislation that's being brought in by different governments around the world, often with very little notice. It can be really tricky to keep on top of all of this legislation when you're operating in hundreds of countries. And I know that a few UK companies, for example, almost got cut out last year by the UK's new plastic packaging tax that makes UK companies liable to pay a tax on non-recyclable packaging that is used in their supply chain, used by their suppliers. So we were one of those companies that had to respond to this. And, you know, luckily we've put in place an appropriate compliance program. But it has also served to galvanize us at Alliance to sort of increase the overall environmental sustainability of our packaging. And so, you know, these laws are serving to drive the right behaviors. And then finally, I think I've already touched on this, but I'm sort of really passionate about the topic of UK corporates scaling their ENC programs globally. Yeah. Mm. You will be able to tell from my accent that I am not from the UK. I am from the former British colony of Canada.
Yeah.
And so I do have the unique perspective of being an immigrant to the weird and wonderful British culture. So, you know, I do believe that if UK companies are going to thrive in a global landscape, they really do need to take the time to understand and respect the really very different cultures, languages, and sort of social mores of the countries in which they operate. Mm. So this can often be as simple as ensuring that different accents and nationalities are represented in compliance training modules that I've already covered, or that training is delivered in local language, or that compliance officers take the time to understand like the specific ethical challenges faced in regional offices, which can really vary across the world.
Yeah, definitely agreed. And that was, you know, that's another link to one of the findings on our report. You know, we did find that, you know, UK ethics and compliance programs, you know, they are really trying to scale their operations globally, and they are doing so, and they're using different methods to do that, whether it's, you know, regional committees and ethics ambassadors in local regions, in addition to appointing compliance officers on the ground in countries in which they have major operations. But, you know, one of the interesting points on that was that we didn't actually find that to be a key indicator for high performing programs, which led us to perhaps consider that, you know, it's not necessarily which methods that, you know, UK ENC programs are using to scale their operations globally. It's more about the quality of those methods and their impact. So, you know, again, you know, I hear you when you talk about, are they really considering local nuances, whether it's just things such as, you know, accents and ways to really kind of get in touch with, you know, local requirements.
And the other thing I would say, Francis, on that as well, is I feel like maybe 20 years ago, there was kind of like you took a compliance program off a bookshelf and rolled it out. And I think there's a recognition now that a risk-based approach and a tailored approach for your company, you don't need to boil the ocean.
Yeah.
You just need to target and mitigate and understand the specific risks for your company.
Definitely agreed on that. You know, that takes us neatly into, you know, it's not about boiling the ocean, as we said. And, you know, just kind of on that theme, on that tone, unfortunately, not every insight from the report, you know, is a positive one. And there are areas that need significant improvement. For example, you know, we found that the gap between leadership and middle management when it comes to putting, you know, ENC into practice, you know, really continues to grow. So, for example, in the UK, there's actually a 29% difference between executives and senior leaders on one hand and middle managers on the other hand, in terms of taking into account company values to make difficult decisions. And that's actually the highest gap since LRN started collecting data on that point. And I just wondered if that surprised you at all, and if there are some ways you'd recommend that ENC leaders in the UK can address this.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by this finding. I think this is really an enduring issue in global ENC programs, because the executives who set the targets are not the operational managers delivering the results. And there can sometimes be like a reality check needed between senior leadership's expectations and the art of the possible. Equally, there are also the UK companies, admittedly fewer and fewer these days, at least that's the glass half full version of Gabby speaking, where there are executives who pay lip service to ethics but don't provide middle managers with the resources or tools to deliver effective compliance programs. You know, I do have a lot of empathy for leadership teams who are being squeezed in the current environment to both deliver shareholder value, you've got to deliver that shareholder value, while also delivering ENC targets that often increase operational costs. It can be a really bitter pill to swallow and really hard to deliver. So I think the best way to address this potential disconnect is to, as I said previously, have a board level ENC committee with overall oversight and responsibility and accountability for ethics and compliance in the business, with an operational sort of subcommittee that delivers the ENC program on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
I think you also need to have at least, and this is, I think, a finding from the report as well, at least one dedicated individual, obviously ideally a team,
yeah,
who has core responsibility for ethics and compliance, who can, yes, help project manage and provide like pace and focus to the compliance work streams. Because I've heard a lot of great ideas and blue sky thinking that remain just that, unless you have somebody who's actually dedicated to delivering them in practice.
Yeah, definitely agreed. And that definitely does link to the report. You know, when we look at high impact programs, for example, and I was referring before to quality in terms of how those programs are implemented, you know, they definitely have that edge in terms of quality resources. And that was a distinguishing feature. You know, for example, high performing programs, they were nearly 1.5 times more likely than less effective programs to have around 5 to 10 dedicated ethics and compliance professionals. So that was quite a key finding. So thank you for your thoughts on that point. And, you know, it's great to see that many of the findings actually resonate, you know, with the work that you do and with the industry that you're in. And I just wonder, you know, how is your organization planning to address some of these trends in 2024?
Yeah. So in 2024, we're really going to focus on honing our risk-based approach to compliance. And this is going to be through initiatives such as conducting a targeted and focused gaps analysis of modern slavery compliance in our supply chain with the support of Slave Free Alliance. I'm just going to give them a little plug because Slave Free Alliance are a fantastic not-for-profit organization.
Yep.
And they effectively operate as like a critical friend to corporates and organizations, sort of supporting them to like protect their operations, supply chains, and people from modern slavery and labor exploitation. So they've been really helpful in helping us hone our anti-slavery program.
Okay.
Also in 2023, we established a board level ESG committee. So that's covering human rights and ethics and compliance. And so 2024, it's going to be its first full year of operation. So this year, we are going to, at the ESG committee, we're going to be focusing primarily on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives.
Okay.
Improving the environmental sustainability of our packaging, as I already mentioned, and also looking to mature our human rights strategy.
That sounds great. You know, I just kind of think about things, particularly for ESG on the UK horizon. You know, where we're being more and more subjected to, you know, ESG regulation. You know, you've got the FCA's new sustainability disclosure requirements, and there are also those proposed diversity, equity, and inclusion rules to boost DEI in financial services. Yeah, so those are great points, and it's great to hear that, you know, all of that is, you know, on your radar in terms of those focus areas. I just wanted to kind of move on and just kind of consider, you know, are there any other points that you'd want to highlight, you know, when you look at the UK findings or to emphasize?
Yeah. So one of the findings that really resonated with me is the finding that ethical culture matters and underpins successful performance across an organization, not just in ethics and compliance. And so I would agree that it's definitely my experience that it's not just sort of top-down diktats or rules-based policy that determines the success of a business, but it's a genuine no-blame culture based on trust and values. So I would wholly agree with that. I think it's especially important for companies that are seeking to recruit the generation that's currently entering the workforce, because Gen Zers, you know, they genuinely expect their employer to align with their moral center and to live their values at work.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, it's questions that people have when they go in for job interviews. It's questions that you can see that can come across in code of conducts, you know, that we prepare, where those values, you know, companies really want to get that across. And you know, that, again, that goes back to that initial point that we started off with when we spoke about values over rules. It's not just a checklist. It's about implementing a values-based approach. And, you know, with that in mind, I just wanted to move on to talk about the fact that 2024 marks the 10th annual publication of LRN's Ethics and Compliance Program Effectiveness Report. And we've covered quite a few areas where programs can improve their effectiveness and strengthen core components, risk mitigation efforts, focusing on values and, you know, really put into practice and E&C at all levels, and also incentivizing ethical conduct. And, you know, that's what we've looked at over the last 10 years. And so I just really wanted to tap into what you're thinking in terms of what sorts of developments do you hope to see E&C programs tackle over the next year or even the next 10 years?
Okay, so I know that we are now 4 years out from the pandemic, but I really feel like there's been a paradigm shift when it comes to flexible and remote working. So in the next year, I think that ethics and compliance leaders are going to need to tackle employee well-being and look at implementing such things as like employee engagement charters that kind of firmly enshrine policies around flexible and hybrid working so that employees clearly know where they stand. Recognizing that people should have autonomy and responsibility to manage their career whilst fulfilling their deliverables and meeting expectations of stakeholders. I know that there are, you know, certain corporate leaders who have come out with really contrary opinions, but it just feels like there's been a permanent shift to flexible working. And I believe compliance programs need to recognize and address this as a human rights issue.
Yeah. Well, we did actually find, Gabby, you know, with our findings that generally with UK ethics compliance programs, there has been that shift to make significant changes to the program to meet the needs of employees working remotely on a hybrid basis. You know, for the UK, we found about 72% of programs had done that. And that kind of aligned with the 72% at the European level, and just a little bit lower than the global level of 74%. So hopefully we're going in the right direction.
Well, and it just opens doors and is game changing for women, for carers, for parents, for people living with disabilities, for people who live not in cities. You know, it has really increased access to employment. So I do think it is a human rights issue of our time.
Yeah.
Okay, so you also asked me about the next 10 years.
Yes.
I'm going to make a very obvious point here, but I don't think we can ignore the impact of the environment on ethics and compliance programs. Yeah. So climate change is the existential crisis of our time. I really believe that companies are going to need to fundamentally adapt the capitalist model that has basically been gospel since the Industrial Revolution. This is one that justifies increasing shareholder value at the complete expense of the environment. Over the next decade, ethics and compliance programs, I think, will need to play a key role in evolving corporate strategies around environmental compliance and sustainability.
Yeah, definitely agreed. I mean, you know, we have the regulation there, and kind of going back to that value-based model, it's really about making it center, isn't it? You know, we've got regulations, you know, one just thinks about, yes, we're in the UK, but there's still the European Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, which does require UK organisations with at least one subsidiary or branch in the EU and exceeding a certain threshold to provide sustainability reporting. So they're definitely agreed on those points, Gabby. You know, I think we could speak all day in terms of the findings from this report. There's so much food for thought. But, you know, I really want to thank you for sharing your insights from the report. It's really been great having you on the podcast. I hope you'll come back and speak with us again soon. I'm going to pause.
Oh, thank you, Frances. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. And I'm really grateful to have the chance to give my thoughts and insights on your report.
Oh, thank you so much, Gabby. Well, everyone, my name is Frances Obekwe, and I want to thank you all for tuning into the Principled Podcast by LRN.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.